Well, hello there and welcome to the Archaeology News Weekly. Yes, I said I'd be back and here I am. It's David Connolly here, your jovial host. And this news, of course, is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and to view details on each story, including the source, please see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. And now the main headlines from around the world are as follows. Well, we start with a scoop from Stone Pages itself, the sealed wonders of Sardinia. Then we move on to the normal news with the origins of clothing, dated thanks to lice DNA study. Unauthorised construction may have damaged effigy mounds in Iowa, and mysterious desert lions called kites are now recognised as ancient animal traps in Jordan and Israel. 6,000-year-old cave paintings are found in China. While still in the caves, stalagmites reveal the carbon footprint of early Native Americans. The final Seahenge oak stump completes the museum exhibit. And on a horticultural note, Turkish lentils are 4,000 years past their sell-by date, but are sprouting. Finally, the most baffling Stonehenge story of all, Australians build a new Stonehenge by the sea. So, let's start with this scoop from Stone Pages itself. While visiting Sardinia on a field trip, the Stone Pages team were shown a series of striking images by a farmer taken last year, showing wide red ochre spirals painted on the walls of a side cell of a prehistoric tomb that had been secretly excavated in 2009. The farmer then went on to tell the story of the Tomba del Scacchiara, the checkered tomb. A prehistoric necropolis had been discovered in the area in 2002, and by 2007, the Bornorva municipality received funding to complete a survey of the archaeological sites in the area. After the first phase of survey, a further season began the following year. A few weeks after the start of the search, the archaeologists were saying that they had yet to find anything, but this eagle-eyed farmer noticed the excavators coming down the hill covered with rock powder. He asked them in Sardinian, "Did the sow give birth to the piglets?" And the excavators answered also in Sardinian, "Yes, and you should see how many and how beautiful they are." The farmers and his brother couldn't resist, and a few days later, they went and discovered, under a rock sheet placed there by the excavators, an entrance passage with a rock-cut facade leading into a huge tomb with three side cells. The tomb is decorated with bright red ochre drawings with huge bull heads carved on the long side of the main chamber, and with the 1.7 metre high roof carved as it was made of wooden planks, painted in dark blue and white. But the most striking visual element of the tomb is a series of seven great red spirals painted on a side cell. The quality of the ancient painting is quite breathtaking, and on the roof and the side vault there's also geometric figures found very rarely in Sardinian tombs. It's a black and white checkered motif, something probably unique on the site, apparently dating back to the late Neolithic and related to the so-called Azeri culture from 3800 to 2900 BCE. After about 4 months of excavations, however, the archaeological authority decided to put a massive block of rock in front of the only entrance of the tomb and then seal it with concrete before covering the whole area with a thick layer of soil, covering the tomb once again, perhaps forever. When challenged, this was all done to protect the tomb against looters, so the tomb and its amazing paintings have now disappeared, which is a fate shared also by other tombs in the same area, like one at Sapalla Larga, where an impressive bullhead is carved above a series of spirals that form a tree of life motif. Now, provided that we agree on the absolute necessity to preserve the tomb from looters, it looks like sealing being the sensible short-term option. And of course, now the tombs are open, they are more susceptible to water damage. So what about the long-term options? Italian heritage is a national treasure and must be shared with the world. Protection is one thing, but hiding an ancient site indefinitely, especially one of this importance, even if motivated by preservation principles, is something quite different. To see what you can do to open up the debate, go along to this web address. It's www.stonepages.com/scacchiera, and that was /SCACCHIERA. And there you will also manage to find remarkable images of this 4,500-year-old tomb, painted as if yesterday. I have to confess that when I saw this for the first time, I just could not believe what I was looking at. Using DNA to trace the evolutionary split between head and body lice, researchers conclude that body lice first came on the scene approximately 190,000 years ago, and that shift, the scientists propose, followed soon after people began first wearing clothing. Andrew Kitchen of Pennsylvania State University said the new estimate sheds light on a poorly understood cultural development that allowed people to settle in northern and colder regions. Armed with little direct evidence, scientists have previously estimated that clothing originated anywhere between 1 million years ago to 40,000 years ago. An earlier analysis of mitochondrial DNA from the two modern types of lice indicated that body lice evolved from head lice only around 70,000 years ago. Because body lice thrive in the folds of clothing, they likely appeared not long after clothes themselves were invented. Kitchen and team examined both mitochondrial and nuclear DNA samples from head and body lice, yielding the much older and presumably more accurate estimate of when body lice first evolved. And this would come up with a date for making of clothes around 190,000 years ago. Well, that story just unfortunately just makes me itch. Sorry about that. Unauthorized construction projects may have damaged the ancient cultural features that Effigy Mounds National Monument in Iowa, USA was established to protect. A team of archaeologists is working to determine what damage to the mounds may have been inflicted by the unauthorized construction of a maintenance shed and an elevated boardwalk trail directly across from the visitor center. In an effort to improve access to mounds for people of limited mobility, Effigy Mounds staff had begun construction of the Nazca Terrace Boardwalk in the fall of 2008. Work was abruptly halted a year ago when Park Service regional staff, conducting a periodic compliance review, found that two required documents had not been completed before the project was undertaken. The review uncovered other irregularities dating back to 1999, said Steve Adams, the Park Service's Midwest Regional Associate Director of Cultural Resources. The maintenance shed has already been dismantled, and the fate of the Nazca Terrace Boardwalk will be determined by an advisory council, which includes tribal representatives, after the archaeological study, of course, is completed. Options include removing the trail overground portions, removing the entire trail, and including many of the underground concrete piers. The final option, of course, is leaving it as it is. Effigy Mound Superintendent Phyllis Ewing said that she takes full responsibility for the failure to follow the legally prescribed procedures. The Park Service's dual mission, she said, is to preserve natural and cultural resources and to make them available for education and the enjoyment of the public. In this case, park staff failed to maintain the proper balance. Well, naughty naughty, but at least they are taking responsibility for this, and I'm really hoping that not too much damage was done. British RAF pilots in the early 20th century were the first to spot the strange kite-like lines on the deserts of Israel, Jordan and Egypt from the air, and to wonder about their origins. The lines are low stone walls, usually found as angled pairs, that begin far apart and converge at circular pits. In some places in Jordan, the lines form chains of up to 40 miles. A new study of 16 of what are called desert kites in the eastern Sinai desert confirms what many researchers have long suspected. The walls form large funnels to direct gazelle and other large game animals into killing pits. What's more, the kites are between 2,300 and 2,400 years old. They were all abandoned around 2,200 years ago and are just the right size to have worked on local gazelles and other game. Uzi Avner of Ben-Gurion University in Eilat in Israel said the research showed construction of the kite structure was more sophisticated than it seemed before, and the use was also more diverse. For a time, many researchers suspected the kites might have been corrals for protecting domesticated animals, but that idea has fallen out of favour as more research has been done. Interestingly, the walls of the kites are not high enough to actually block the animals. Rather, they seem just to channel herds into the right direction. Modern wildlife managers in the same region have been using a similar approach by laying pipes on the ground to direct gazelles into corrals. A careful examination of not just the kites, but their locations in relation to the pastures and migration routes makes it very clear that desert kites were specialised for specific types of animals. Some kites cleverly exploited low spots in the landscape to lure animals into unseen killing pits. Other sorts of kites were found on steep slopes or ridges below a plateau or shoulder of a hill, so that animals driven over the ridge would suddenly be confronted by the installation before and below them. As for why the kites fell out of use by the beginning of the Middle Bronze Age, well, that's still a bit of a mystery. It may suggest a climatic change or a shift in subsistence strategies. So, any ideas, anyone? I've actually been myself lucky enough to see them, in fact, some from the air, as we did a helicopter survey at Jerash. We ended up sort of flying a wee bit over the desert, and there are some incredible sights to be seen out there. Chinese archaeologists have discovered two 6,000-year-old sites with coloured cave paintings and handprints in northern China's Inner Mongolia Autonomous Region. The discoveries were made in two caves situated in the Yabrai Mountains. An official with the Inner Mongolia Cultural Bureau, Wang Dafang, said the handprints were painted with a mixed dyes of ochre powder, animal blood and water. The cave environment, the painting style, and the materials used for the paintings here are very similar to the European Paleolithic cave paintings 20,000 years earlier. Changes in weather patterns, heavy rains and soil erosion, however, have caused extensive damage to the murals. Chemical analysis of a stalagmite found in the mountainous Buckeye Region Basin of Western Virginia in the USA suggests that native people contributed a significant level of greenhouse gases to the atmosphere through land use practices. The early Native Americans burned trees to actively manage the forest to yield the nuts and fruit that were a large part of their diet. They were very advanced and they knew how to get the most out of the forests and landscapes they lived in. This was all across North America, not just a few locations, so said the lead author of the study. Initially, Gregory Springer, an associate professor of geological sciences at Ohio University, and research collaborators from the universities of Texas and Minnesota, were studying historic drought cycles in North America using carbon isotopes in stalagmites. To their surprise, the carbon record contained evidence of a major change in the local ecosystem beginning around 100 BCE. This intrigued the team because an archaeological excavation in a nearby cave had yielded evidence of Native American community there 2,000 years ago. The team found very high levels of charcoal beginning 2,000 years ago, as well as carbon isotope history similar to the stalagmite. This evidence suggests that Native Americans significantly altered the local ecosystem by clearing and burning forests, probably to make fields and enhance the growth of nut trees. After 12 years of preservation efforts, the 8-foot-high oak tree from the centre of the Bronze Age Sea Henge Timber Circle joined the rest of the excavated monument in Lynn Museum in Norfolk, England. The stump, weighing 1.5 tons, had to be lifted in through the front window of the museum. The exhibit, including a replica of the original formation, will open this summer, but more than 20,000 visitors have already come to see the oak posts since they went on display 2 years ago. The oak posts from around the outer circle underwent 10 years of preservation with techniques similar to those used to preserve the Mary Rose, a warship of Henry VIII's. Because of its size, the central oak required an additional 2 years of work. Funds for the preservation efforts were provided by the Mary Rose Trust of Portsmouth. Sea Henge was built on the edge of an ancient forest, and carbon and tree ring dating gives a precise date of 2049 BP for the construction of the timber circle. It's the only known site of its kind ever found. A peat bog preserved the stumps after they were covered by sand, and a storm in 1998 once again revealed the monument. A site nearly as controversial as Stonehenge, and my favourite moment is when a battle-hardened digger is nose-to-nose with a baffle-hardened druid. Now, from the mighty to the minute. Turkish archaeologists have discovered some 4,000-year-old intact lentil seeds when excavating the Seyatomer district of Turkey. The seeds have now been germinated in a sterile environment and are ready for planting out of doors. It's not known how the plants will react once they're exposed to a non-sterile environment, though. Dr. Nukit Bingol said that they have 17 plants grown from the 4,000-year-old lentils, and now they're going to plant our sprouts in the field and try and get more seeds. Scientists are very interested in this development as the seeds are quite different to modern-day lentils, and it may assist in the development of, oh no, genetically modified foods. Yipes. Sorry about that, folks. And finally, work on a new Stonehenge Down Under is scheduled to start shortly in a bid to attract tourists and increase revenue. The Rotary Club of Esperance in Western Australia is leading a plan to build a full-scale replica of the Neolithic monument on a council-owned site overlooking a local beach. Kim Beale, a spokesman for the local Rotary Club, said that obviously some of the people may wonder why you'd build Stonehenge at Esperance, but the stone is already here and we think it's a good opportunity. The structure will consist of some 100 stones of up to 45 tons each. Now, while some townsfolk remain sceptical about the plan due to the failure of a previous Stonehenge proposal, good grief, the $1.2 million Australian dollar project is backed by the local tourist operators, and the giant pink granite stones are to be donated by a local quarry. Esperance's only other attraction is, wait for it, part of the US Skylab satellite, which crashed to Earth nearby on a local farm in 1979. You just can't make this one up, can you? I wonder if the Druids will travel there for the solstice. You never know. I actually hope they do it. I'd love to see some photographs of this Stonehenge by the beach. Anyway, I should say that we're working hard on the next issue of Past Horizons magazine. That will be up online at the end of the first week in May. So if you want to see any of the previous editions, get yourself along to www.pasthorizons.com/magazine, where you can also, of course, buy some lovely tools from the tool store and find yourself a dig to enjoy yourself on over the spring, summer and autumn. Can I also remind people that many new archaeological and heritage employment opportunities, as well as a fully updated UK heritage calendar, library and guidance section, can be found on my own site. That's Badger, www.bajr.org. And remember, more can always be found at Stonepages, news.stonepages.com. So thank you for listening to this rather exciting edition. I hope you do go along to Stonepages and have a look at the amazing photographs of the Sardinian tomb. And you'll come back to us again next week.